I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Real Spoilers, powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
Real Spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 336.
What are we doing? The Disaster Artist.
The Disaster Artist. Sorry.
Didn't we just talk about this?
It's been a long week.
Like, literally, it was probably 5 to 10 seconds before.
Yeah. It all blurs together. I didn't go to bed till 1 o'clock. Like, that's late for me.
I haven't gone to bed yet.
Yeah.
Nice.
Well, that's your choice.
That is my choice. That's true.
I guess so, yeah. Was staying up till 1 o'clock. But
hanging out with something Haynes or whatever.
Walker Hayes and Old Dominion.
Yep. There you go.
There you go.
Those are big country acts.
Perfect.
Old Dominion.
I hope people who love country love those people.
Old Dominion is a big country act.
Okay.
Yeah, they are.
Oh, I totally believe you. I know nothing
they
about
country.
They open
for music. Eminent Domain.
It's Eminem's country group.
Yeah.
Now, this is going to be a real treat for the people because we're going to do the entire show in our best Tommy Wiseau accents, which is great.
I'll get right on that.
Yeah. I think A24 did a... A24 is I think it's British. It's production.
They're on
company.
Fire this year. I'll tell you that much.
But they did like...
Oh, that's why they spelled four with a U.
Correct.
Yeah.
Umlaut is all over it. They did like the best...
An umlaut.
I don't know. That's not even... say that over Motorhead.
For sure that's German.
That's German. That's probably...
Yeah.
But they did like the Tommies. So it was... People could submit their best Tommy impression.
Right.
And then they put them online. Some of them are very good.
People go into coffee shops and they go into malls and they just
do
the craziest scenes.
In the middle of you could tell people walking around are like, what is happening?
The one that won is the skating rink. Did you see the winner?
I did see the
and
winner.
And there's a guy that goes to check on it because he's doing the death scene and he's in the middle of the rink.
He's humping.
And the guy's
checking the dress.
But he just keeps on groaning and the guy's like, are you okay? And he's like, I'm doing a part. And he eventually just looks and he's like, walks away.
I mean, if you're gonna do that, you have to do that in New York or LA. Like any other in St. Louis, they're gonna be like, call the cops.
Right.
There's something wrong with them.
This is too artsy to be.
we don't go for that kind of stuff
here. Too artsy fartsy around here, these here parts.
But then Denny and Lisa, the two friends playing them, actually walk up in the skating rink, and I think that's when the guy turns around because he's like, What is
happening?
He's like, you can tell he's old. He's like, I think I'm being punked.
Yes.
This is that Ashton Kutcher show.
Wilmer Valderrama going to...
Was he on Punk'd?
They were friends at that time. I think they both had MTV shows.
Ooh, he was a thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not a thing anymore.
Is that the one that... No, he's
that's
not
Fez.
Yeah, he's not the one that's going to jail.
No, that's Danny Masterson.
Yeah, he's a bad guy.
Danny Masterson is in some trouble. Lots of trouble. Yeah. They pulled him off... Whatever garbage show he was on.
The Ranch.
Yeah, with Ashton Kutcher, I think.
People liked that show, but...
It's funny. I hate the internet sometimes. People are like, they're like, oh, he's no longer on The Ranch. And people are like, whatever that is. And I'm like, you know what? I get it's not your thing, but it's like their third most popular show.
Right?
It's very popular,
Is it a comedy?
Yeah, I think it's like a regular sitcom type of thing, is it?
It's just like a sitcom, but Danny and it was Danny, Ashton Kutcher, and then
Sam Elliott.
Sam Elliott,
yeah,
is like their dad or something.
And does he have the mustache?
He always has the mustache.
No, he doesn't. He didn't have the mustache on Parks and Rec.
Well, there's like one time
because he was the opposite Ron Swanson.
Yeah. But
it was the mustache.
Yeah, it's from like two of the main writers from Two and a Half Men. So it's that.
Oh,
it's that type of show.
I gotcha.
Yeah,
I never got into that show either.
Yeah, which means I hate it, but people love it.
Yeah, it's like The Big Bang.
Yeah.
It's garbage.
I can't stand
garbage show.
No offense to people like it, but
I don't care if you're offended.
Oh, it's not for you, Joe, but I cannot stand shows like any of those sitcom-y shows. I like How I Met Your Mother because it's smart, right? And I mean, it's not traditional sitcom, but it's still in that category.
Yeah.
But it's so smart and so good. And anything that's like, I mean, Friends, I just started watching for the first
time. Friends was good.
I'm like that. Okay, that transcended the
Seinfeld's the
genre.
Same way. Seinfeld's.
Oh, sure. But all these newer ones, it's like, oh, they're just not funny to me. Like Two and a Half Men, I tried to watch that one time. Garbage.
Yeah, garbage.
That show is so bad.
My wife really likes New Girl. And I'm not I don't like Jessica or Jess. I think she's annoying, but Schmidt is really funny.
That like show's smart too, though. Like, yeah, so the Good Place.
The other characters are.
I don't know
funny.
If you would call that a sitcom, but
It's just 30 minutes. It's very much a situation. Okay.
So like The Good Place, New Girl, like those shows, again, the writers are smart. Those are the younger, like those are the comedic talents of today that all those writers, you know, just like I love Comedy Bang Bang.
I don't like Comedy Bang Bang.
Oh God!
Yeah, well, I'm not like I've tried more than once.
Well, we can't talk. I love that show, but it's like all those the younger comedians, like all the people that go on Comedy Bang Bang, all the guests are the writers and the stars of all those newer comedies, and I just love that new group of talent.
It feels like those like the Big Bang Theory and those shows feel like it's when your mom and dad try to be cool, and it fails miserably. that's what those shows feel like. And then they're just like, hey, you know what we should do? Make another one of those. Oh, okay, we'll do Young Sheldon.
When it makes that kind of money.
No, that's true.
Yeah, that's what you do.
Yeah, that's very true.
That's what you do.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's not people like, oh, TV's out of ideas. It's like, there was a show called Mrs. Columbo. So this isn't a new thing.
I don't think TV is going through a renaissance. Like, I think TV is doing some more creative things than movies.
It's so fractured that you don't need to be as mass appeal.
Right.
To have a hit.
You can go anywhere you want.
So you can get shows like The Good Place or one of my favorites that I will plug, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
Yeah, I know you're a fan.
That's that show's amazing.
Like The Flash.
I tried it. Just
no, you didn't like it? Dang.
Just, like, bored. Yeah.
That's a shame. I love that show.
Mr. Robot?
I still haven't gotten around to that one.
And then, so, I mean, that's Network. That's USA.
That's USA.
But then,
USA
of course
always has, like, so they had Burn Notice, which was awesome. Like, I loved that show.
Yeah, it's great.
La Femme Nikita.
Suits?
No, Suits, they had
was
Suits.
Pretty popular.
Yeah, Suits was popular.
Dead Zone.
Robot. Dead Zone.
Dead Zone was
Dead Zone was good.
I never watched it, but it was
good. It was a good little show.
Yeah. They've had some good shows.
It's an interesting concept to turn into a TV show that makes complete sense when you turn it into a TV show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait,
yeah,
Dead Zone, Christopher Walken?
No, Dead Zone was Michael,
Anthony Michael Hall.
But yes, the movie.
No, I'm saying Christopher Walken movie was
turned into a TV show.
It was that property,
Anthony Michael Hall.
Really?
Yeah, it was pretty good.
And it lasted like 5 or 6 seasons.
Yeah, USA... They'll do some weird stuff.
Yeah. So we should probably go around the table and everyone can introduce themselves.
This is Joe.
Oh, hi, Tom.
Oh, don't start.
Oh, you know you're going to be the only one doing that, right?
Yeah, it's just you.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. There you go. And my name actually is Tom, but I'm not going to do it. So
we need a Mark on the show. That's what we need.
I made a point not to invite anyone named Mark. Not doing that.
Oh, hi, Mark.
But I do have one. But I do have breast cancer.
Did you get the test back?
It's official. Yeah,
you definitely.
I definitely have breast
cancer. You're fine.
Yeah. Just real quick, shameless plugs. Don't forget, we're available on iTunes. You can go there, rate, review, subscribe. It helps us tremendously. We greatly appreciate it. People who were kind enough to share the show this week: Librarian Cynthia, Linnea Thunsell, Chris James, Dylan Lang. I think that's a new one. I believe that's a new one. So we'll have to put that. Off to the side so Dan can write a song
for
you on the next episode. Tom Gamiski, Tammy Sherman Powers, Chris Sanders, Timmy Tuzoons, Lane LeVanway, Travis Tewitt, Brent Smith, Jason Weesey, Griffin Fox Smith, Julianne Jordan, Christine Standerfer Hogue.
That's a new one.
I think it's a new one.
That's going to be a fun song to write, Dan.
Good luck, Dan.
Yeah, Richard Lawson, Dustin at Nerds at Night Gaming, Chris Magic Man, and Jason Michael. So thanks, everybody, for sharing the show.
Especially our new people.
Thank you. Yes, absolutely. We love to see new people hop on board. So welcome to the fold.
That's right.
So there. We've got all the busy work out of the way. We will now talk about the disaster artiste.
So I knew...
Oh, with an umlaut.
Yeah,
with an umlaut. With an umlaut. That's how you know to pronounce it artiste.
That's right. I knew the room existed. Like, I knew it was a thing. I had never seen it. So,
oh wow, you have
never.
Which one did you watch first?
The Room.
Okay, so you did watch.
Yeah,
the Room.
I mean, I figure that's the way I should do it.
I loaned him my autographed copy,
Blu-ray copy. Yeah. Mind now, you,
did you loan him your autographed underwear that Tommy sends?
No, that you're the one that purchased the underwear. Oh.
I'm the only one with Tommy Wiseau underwear.
Is it in the font of Tommy Hilfiger?
It looks a lot like Tommy Hilfiger.
Shocking. Yeah.
So, and for people, if you don't own a copy of The Room yet and you would like to purchase one, then we're going to do a shameless plug for stuff that's not us.
Yeah, right.
It's an altruistic plug.
Ooh. This is the season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you're going to buy the DVD or Blu-ray, you should buy it directly from Tommy Wiseau's website because... it'll come autographed, and it's like $2 more than if you buy it on Amazon.
And why not?
And he literally will send you a free pair of underwear with it.
Did you get a free pair of underwear? Sometimes that's the deal. That was thankfully not the deal that was going on, but it did come in a bag that said underwear.
No, it didn't. Yeah. Are you serious?
Yeah, it was like he like recycles the plastic bags. He's like, he just throws it in there. And so I'm like, the DVD shows up, and I take it out of the bag, and I put it in the DVDs, and I left the bag on the kitchen table, and my wife's like,
Did you buy underwear?
Why is there a bag for underwear?
It's just a white bag in black print that just says underwear.
It says like Tommy Wiseau underwear. And she's like, what is
that? Is so weird.
What is that? And yeah. I was like, we'll watch the movie and then
it will all make sense.
It won't make any sense, but it will make sense.
Yes.
She's like, okay,
fair enough.
So first of all, you missed out. I'm sorry. And second of all, so if you get the underwear, order two sizes bigger than what you think you will wear, because I ordered extra large, which is like
Let's be honest, Kevin.
Well, it's not. It's my waistline. But no, I ordered extra large, and I couldn't get them over my legs. Like, I don't know if he just has one size and he changes the tags.
Oh, no, I'm sure he just made up his own sizes.
Right? But I don't know if this is for, like, models, and so extra large models. Where, you know, but so, like, order if you're a medium, normally get the extra large because you will get a
medium.
That's
hilarious.
So I can't even use them. So I have these underwear that, with the big, the band is three times taller than a normal band.
Sounds about right.
It says block letters Tommy Wiseau around the front.
It's just, what a strange, crazy story.
It is, and if you, for all the listeners out there, if you haven't read the book, this movie we're talking about, The Disaster Artist, is based on a book written by Greg Sestero,
who plays Mark
in the movie.
The Dave Franco character.
Yeah, and so he actually, you know, this whole story is real about him going to Hollywood with Tommy and meeting him in acting class. All that's real, and the movie does a really good job, but the book goes so much further in depth to the craziness, and it also alternates chapters, so it actually goes back and forth between...
Oh, it's like Gone Girl.
Yes, it's just like Gone Girl.
In a way, yeah.
And so it alternates between Mark... Greg meeting Tommy and then the movie being made. And so it's really interesting that it's like a chapter about how they met, then the first day on The Room, and then another story about them going to LA.
I can see The Disaster Artist kind of feels like that. Like it flows more linear.
Well, it's more chronological.
Goes, yeah, yeah. The first part is meeting and then the second.
Right, right, right.
But the book is really neat and you get all that stuff. You get more info and it actually, some of it dives into like investigating Tommy's background,
that's the most insane part of the whole story. Right? So, we'll tell you right now. So this, nobody knows where this guy's from.
He finally admitted he's from Europe.
Perfect.
On Johnny Carson? Yeah. Very old. On the Steve Allen show. Ernie Kovacs was filling in. And
on the Arsenio Hall show.
Yeah. Jimmy Kimmel on the Jimmy
Is that
Kimmel.
Right?
They had him and like, the Francos, it was like a whole panel of,
okay.
And he finally admitted that he is from Europe.
And not
Jimmy
New Orleans.
He's like trying to get where are you from originally, and he just goes, he's like, well, originally from Europe, and then everyone's like, what? And they kind of brushed it off, but James Franco's like, this is new information. No one's ever heard this before. He's never admitted it. People all think that he's from Eastern Europe.
Yeah.
But
yes, that's exactly
it's
where
never
he's
been
from.
Admitted, so we don't know the exact country. Also, no one knows how old he is.
He's in his 90s.
Greg's age.
There's the great scene with in the movie with Megan
Mullally,
yeah. Where she's just like, "How old are you?" He's like, "I'm as old as your son."
And
he's
you're just 19. Like,
no, you're not.
And then she goes, "Yeah, I just turned 14." Best like, "Happy birthday!" Yeah. It's so good.
They don't know where he's from. Yeah. They don't know how old he is. They don't know where he gets his money.
Yeah,
because he they there's a scene in the movie where the guy's just like, this account is a money pit.
Yeah, he was like, it's a bottomless pit.
Yeah,
like
don't worry about it.
Your check's gonna clear, and that's when they're like, okay.
I love that Seth Rogen in that scene where he's just like, yeah, here you go. And he's like, it went through. He's like, oh yeah.
So there's lots of different theories, and the book gets into it again. Such a great read. But he apparently was. Some people say he was selling knockoff clothes, like designer clothes and bags and things, but he had supposedly bought a bunch of properties in LA, like before the whole meeting Greg situation. He bought all these businesses and sold clothes, and so, you know, he made his money from clothing.
That would explain the weird style. Like, I always feel like people who are in fashion,
sure,
like, dress super weird, and they're just like, no, it's fashion.
There's a thin line between having no style and having style,
yeah.
Like high fashion.
Yes,
but like you're right. That's why,
like the double belts thing. Yeah. Like,
but that's why he dressed like that. He's been in the clothing industry for 20 years and trying to be fashionable.
Right.
So there's that. Some people say drug dealing, totally rumored. But some people on the set speculated that during the room, which could mean anything. And then one of the big theories is that he had some kind of rich relative that left him
a
bunch of money.
That's what I think it is. Like, I think there's a relative somewhere that he just, it's a money pit.
Well,
like,
he also talks in the book about that he was in some sort of car accident.
Yeah, he does.
And so,
he says in the movie, too.
Yeah, so yeah. I always wondered if it was maybe he got some sort of large cash settlement.
Maybe $6 million worth.
Definitely could have been, but geez, that's a lot of money, especially, even 20 years ago.
It also seems like there'd be some sort of public record. But if he had gotten some sort of cash settlement and then bought some property, kind of got lucky.
Sure,
yeah,
that's possible.
But that's the thing is that he lives this mystery. He is this man of mystery that goes on these tours, and that's the character. He's a real person, but he embraces that mystery because that's what's so intriguing and why people bought this book and why they go see this movie if you've heard about him. Like, who is this guy? How do you make this $6 million movie? If all those answers came out, he wouldn't be
I guess the mystique would be gone.
Yeah, it wouldn't be as interesting because we're just like, who the hell
that's exactly what I was.
This guy.
And that's the way they play this movie is like he steps out of the shadows and he's just there. Like, he just shows up every once in a while.
Yeah.
So we'll get into it. The movie, The Disaster Artist. So anyway, I watched The Room. What the...
yeah.
Yep.
That's
appropriate.
Like, there were... So, I don't know. Kevin's probably old enough to remember this. Tom absolutely is old enough to remember this.
I was like, well, wait. That was a weird starting point. Like,
so back in the late 80s, early 90s, USA would have this thing called USA Up All Night.
Uh-huh.
And they would have, like, it was Downtown Julie Brown or somebody would host it, and it would be like softcore porn on USA, right? So it was like Silk Stockings or something, you know, whatever those shows were.
Right.
This felt like it
Red Shoe Diaries.
The Red Shoe Diaries, yes. Well done. This felt like
that was
the
Showtime.
Room. It was.
On Showtime, it had nudity, but obviously.
On USA.
Not so
cut,
much.
Yeah. This felt like it wanted to be. This was like a low rent, and now USA Up All Night was already low rent. A lower rent.
Right.
USA Up All Night movie.
So the first time I watched this movie, and Devin, friend of the show, brought it over and we watched this thing. My first reaction was, this movie was supposed to be a softcore porn.
Oh, absolutely.
The first 30 minutes of it, there's like 20 minutes of sex scenes.
Okay, so that first sex scene, which they reference in the movie, as I'm watching the original Room, I'm like, he's banging her belly button.
Yeah.
He's so far off of where he should be. And then they reference that.
Yeah.
And I was like, ha ha ha. Aha, as Paul Harris would say.
but it's like, so it feels so apparent where I'm just like, he was trying to make a softcore porn, but like it somehow didn't make it there. But then he tried to make it a legitimate movie, because how do you put that many sex scenes in before you get into the plot of the movie?
They literally have like, so there's about 5 minutes of movie sex scene, about 5 minutes sex scene also with the awkward Denny character.
Oh my gosh.
So weird. Yeah. So weird. And then there was like another 10 minutes, sex scene. Yeah. Another like 15 minutes, sex scene. And then that stopped. Like, that was kind of the last one.
Maybe it's his European roots where like things are a little different over there. Like nudity on the TVs.
So weird. Because, so weird.
That poor woman.
I know.
Yikes.
Yeah. Like, even like watching the movie originally, I was like, oh, this poor actress.
Yeah.
Like, get drunk before those.
Read the book and find out all the stories of how badly he treated. He's like throwing water bottles at people.
So that's the thing is like, when you see the production of this movie, it's exactly how I thought it was going. Like, every horror story I've ever heard. And I just also just watched the Jim and Andy documentary where Danny DeVito's like, somebody's getting sued because this is nuts.
Yeah.
And that's exactly how I pictured this production for The Room going.
That side note, that poor director on the Jim and Andy, like the oh my gosh,
yeah, that, like, if you haven't seen that
poor guy, like, he's just trying to make a good movie and yeah. do his job, and he's a good director, but the stuff he deals with, he's like, I just want to talk to Jim. and he's like, well, I'll tell him for you,
yeah, because that's, and, the deal is, like, Jim Carrey did that production as Andy Kaufman.
Yeah,
like, he went through that whole, he was doing what's the guy from 30 Seconds to Mars?
Oh, Jared Leto.
Jared Leto before Jared Leto was doing it. Okay, so we open in an acting class with Melanie Griffith, who I initially thought was...
the Joker?
Jane Fonda.
Oh.
Because she's had so much work done on her... I don't know how she made her lips move.
Who's the one that was in...
originally the part was played by Jeff Dunham.
Who is the one that was just in that 50 Shades of whatever... of suck?
Kim Basinger.
All the work. Like, she
Basinger.
Looked,
Basinger.
So Basinger?
I thought it was. I don't know.
She looks right. Like the way that she's.
I think it used to be Basinger, and then they corrected everybody. Yeah.
Baldwin. Wasn't she married to Alec at one point?
Yeah,
that was Alec's wife.
Right. Yeah.
Kim Baldwin.
But I'm just like, who is that? Because, like, they both had so much work done. I'm like, who is that?
It's so weird because Kim Basinger looked really good in
Basinger.
God dang it! Looked really good in the Nice Guys. She's like the DA in the Nice Guys.
Oh.
And she looked like $1 million.
I wonder
if it's 50 Shades of Grey.
Yeah.
Just like, here, put powder on your face.
Maybe
that's
it is.
That's all we got. So we open.
Well, the movie is introed by like 10-15 celebrities.
Which, you think those were jokes?
No,
or do you think
no.
they're legit? No, I mean, like, do you think that's how they legitimately feel?
That's how they feel.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
okay. It's Kristen Bell, Adam Scott, Kevin Smith.
J.J. Abrams. Yeah.
Key and Peele's? No, maybe I'm making that up.
There's several, but so the point was...
A lot of big names.
Yeah, and the point was, the reason they did that, Seth Rogen has a great interview on Nerdist, plug for Nerdist too, since it is the season, but he has a great interview where he kind of explains...
Yeah, they need the help.
Yeah. Well, maybe they'll plug us.
Yeah.
But so he says that the reason they did that was so that people that were new to this, like, they didn't need to advertise this movie, Disaster Artist, to people that watch The Room, right?
Yeah.
Because they're gonna see it.
I think if you didn't know that The Room existed, you would not believe that this
no,
was
that's
true.
Very true. That is absolutely true.
And so they did that as a way to connect with people that didn't know The Room and they're seeing this movie, and to show that, like, all these people that they love, you know, you're certainly going to know J.J. Abrams, but you might know Adam Scott from Parks and Rec or Party Down, Kristen Bell from The Good Place, Veronica Mars, whatever. So they gave all these different celebrities.
Anna?
Well, yeah, but people don't.
Probably her biggest
but you don't
role.
See
but
her.
You don't see her. Yeah.
So,
because people watching Anna and Elsa are going to.
It's the Disaster Artist.
Yeah. So anyway, but it gives them all a connection to these celebrities. But it also shows you, like, these are big names, and they all love
Huge
The Room
names.
For different reasons.
Yeah. So yeah. So we open on this acting class, and it's Dave Franco who is playing Greg. And then I wish I could remember the Asian guy's
off
name.
Off the Boat? Is that the Off the
He's
Boat?
He's the Off the Boat guy. He was also Kim Jong-un in The Interview. He was also Asian Jim on The Office, which is, if you haven't seen that gag, that is one of the best gags on The Office of all time.
Yeah.
I love that gag. So they're doing a scene, and Dave Franco's character just is not, he's not working. It's not good. And nobody's good. Like, it's one of those things that I think that people kind of forget about L.A., is that for every Brando, there's 500 guys that don't make it.
1,000.
Like, the number's insane.
People move there, and most of them end up working in bars and waiting tables.
Apatow is in this movie as himself and has a great line where it's just like,
yeah.
For every one of those, there's a billion of you.
Yeah.
Like, it's not going to happen for you.
Right.
It's the hard truth.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And that's something that I think people don't realize about Hollywood. Like, you don't just go to New York and automatically you're on Broadway.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So they, you know, Melanie Griffith is there as this acting coach, and she kind of says, look, you've got the look, like, you're a good looking kid, but you can't act. So all of a sudden, you know, Franco's kind of defeated. He walks back. And she goes, does anybody else want to do a scene? And out of like literally out of the dark,
it's hilarious the way it's filmed with him in the background, and the shadows,
the back of his head up. He's like, I have a scene, and he walks down, and it's exactly what you think. I mean, you've seen Tommy Wiseau, he's become more prevalent now.
Yeah.
Oh, I would say in the last 5 years probably.
Yeah.
It's Franco doing his bet, and I mean, that dude needs to be nominated.
He's going to be.
He has to be. Like, I don't know how he can't be.
Yeah.
Walks down and just sit, like, he pulls a girl out of the audience.
It would be funny if out of everything James Franco this has done, that this is what he gets an
Did he
Oscar
get nominated
for
127 Hours?
I believe so, yeah.
I think he did, yeah.
And he did. That's
a fantastic
flick. That's a great movie.
Yeah. So he takes a chair and he turns it backwards and he sits down.
And this is all filmed from the back of his head. Like, I love the mystery again is that you don't see him until he starts performing.
Right.
So the camera follows him. And yeah, he picks up the girl. He's like, you now. And then,
right.
And then he just, she's like, me, what do I do? And then the acting teacher's like, just go with it.
Yeah. Just go. So he sits down. He kind of like does like the AC Slater thing where he sits, turns the chair around and sits, puts his head down. And all of a sudden, he just starts screaming Stella.
And he's doing that's the James Dean scene that he loves, right?
Marlon Brando from A Streetcar.
Oh, that's Desire. The Marlon Brando
yeah,
scene.
Yeah.
The James
Dean scene comes in the room.
Yeah, Tearing Me Apart is from Rebel Without a Cause. Yeah.
You're tearing me apart.
You're taking me apart. Yeah.
So he just starts screaming Stella out of nowhere. And it's like the first couple times you're like, okay, like we see what we're doing, but he just keeps doing it.
Yeah.
And the girl is standing off to the side and she's just like looking around and like, nobody's stopping him.
Yeah.
So he takes the chair and he flips this chair in the air and he runs over, like kind of runs over to like a set basically and starts scaling the set and is still yelling. He's not saying anything else, just Stella
yelling.
Yeah. It's the only thing. Falls off the set. And then he just stops.
And that's pretty much Tommy Wiseau.
Yep.
Completely untalented. He's 100% untalented.
Yes.
But 1,000% committed.
Yes. Yeah. That's a great way to put it. That's exactly what he is. And he has this drive where he's just like, I mean, okay.
This movie,
you're gonna tell me I can't do it. I'm just gonna do it on my own.
Yeah,
this movie could not have been made. Like, for as much crap as he gets, and as many people that are just so blunt about him not being talented, like he made this movie by himself. However he got the money, he got people involved. He wrote a script. He made it through the hell that it took.
Did he write a script? Just put some words together.
Well, that's what it is. And it's like he did that through his determination and got this movie made. That. It is now bigger than he ever could have imagined. Like if he was really serious and it was okay or decent, you know, it might have made $200,000 have been, you know, okay in the theaters. But like now it's made its money back. And
has it really?
Yeah,
like, I'm honestly curious as to what it's
made.
He
tours around the world showing it.
It's huge on the midnight circuit. And I mean, he's in St. Louis every 6 months or so.
Is that right?
For midnight screenings. Oh, yeah.
And right. No one else owns it. Tommy owns it.
So
which is, if you want to see it, you have to
which
pay Tommy.
Is why you can't find
can't
it on a streaming
stream
service. Like, you can't, like, normally when they sell movies to streaming services, they don't buy them one at a time.
Sure.
Like, the studios package up, here's 100 movies, and, you know, and because his is kind of on its own, you can't bundle it with anything. So most
I wonder if he has a deal with A24 at this point.
I don't know.
Because they did this. The Tommy Awards or whatever.
Right.
So I wonder if he has signed some sort of distribution deal.
They're just promoting the movie.
Well, then why would they promote a movie they have nothing to do with?
They're
promoting the disaster.
Yeah. Right.
Seth Rogen talks about it on the podcast about how genius they are. Like, he's like, usually, you know, it's so hard working with a company and trying to market it, but he's like, A24 is brilliant. And I agree because I've seen all the stuff. Like, they put out some crazy good stuff. But they've done screenings of The Room, and they've made Big Tommy's Planet beach balls and huge footballs, and the Tommy Awards. Like, they are promoting the crap out of this movie, and everyone is talking about it. So, like, A24 is on fire with that. That's the thing, is it's like they know that they've got to get this weird movie that most people haven't heard about there.
It's also coming off of The Interview. Like, I don't think, when was the last time we saw Seth Rogen in a movie?
He's been in those Neighbors movies, this group. Yeah, his Sausage Party.
Yeah, that's true.
But I mean, he was a voice. He wasn't. But yeah, those two Neighbors movies
They're pretty big movies, right?
No, they were. I mean, they're big enough to make a second one.
Yeah, that's true.
And geez, him and Evan Goldberg are into so many. So Future Man is hilarious.
Is that them?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, they created that. Future Man on Hulu, all episodes are out. That is seriously just laugh out loud hilarious. It is an amazing show. Go watch it. But then Preacher is
them. They
got
Preacher. They've got Invincible. They've got, Future Man.
Those guys never stop working. Like, those two are crazy busy with
projects. Yeah, which is fine. Like, that's, yeah. I mean, awesome.
Yeah.
Do it.
Well, yeah, strike while the iron is hot.
Exactly, exactly. So while watching Tommy do this scene, Greg, who is Dave Franco, like, becomes infatuated, and not in a gay way, but just like, look at this guy.
Well,
like,
he's got what he doesn't, right?
Right.
So he wants to be an actor, but he doesn't have that passion
right.
that Tommy does. Like, how does he do that?
And Greg sort of has a little bit of skill. Like, she kind of says, she's like, you've got some, there's something there. And even when we see Sharon Stone later, where she's like, yep, sign this kid now before anybody
else
gets
a hold
of him.
Yeah, he was a good looking dude, and he was a working actor. I mean, he was he was kind of starting to make some inroads.
Right.
I mean, he was making a living doing it.
They don't mention it in the movie, but he was in like Phantasma 3.
Yeah,
or something.
He was like, in some like horror sequel.
He was in Phantasm 3?
Yeah.
I forget which
He's
one.
He's like, but they flew him to the other country to,
yeah.
and he was the star of it. And so like, it was a huge break.
Wait a minute. I've seen Phantasm 3.
I think that's
of
what it is.
Of course you have.
Yeah, because it's great. The tall man. So he has an interaction with Tommy, and he kind of says, like, do you want to... And out of nowhere, Tommy's like, let's just move to L.A. And Franco's just like, what?
He was Puppet Master. He was in...
Okay.
He was in Retro Puppet Master.
Okay, so
Retro.
I have never seen a Puppet Master.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Phantasm, on the other hand.
Yeah.
Let's talk about it.
But yeah, he was in Retro Puppet Master. He was had an uncredited role in Patch Adams, an uncredited role in... Gattaca, EdTV.
But he talks about the. I mean, he's an extra.
He's a glorified extra.
Right,
yeah, but
right.
I mean, but and then, but Retro Puppet Master, he was like a main character.
I think he was
a star of the movie. And
so they brush that aside. Like,
yeah.
This is very close to the story of how it happened, but they only have a couple hours. It's like an hour 45.
Yeah,
so
it moves pretty. It moves a pretty good clip.
It is. Every scene's interesting, and so I think they did a really good job of consolidating it down to the important stuff. But yeah, they don't mention that he actually was an actor in between making.
They make it look like he
went from
L.A. Yeah. to the room.
Yeah.
Like, that's what he did. So they go to L.A. Him and Franco.
Greg and Tommy. Yeah.
Greg has this sweet car. Tommy has this amazing car, and Greg's just kind of like, what is
another
going on?
Another fantastic scene with a kid. So he's picking up. This is when he picks him up for
lunch or whatever.
And so Greg's out there playing football with the little kids, and Tommy pulls up, and he's like, wow, this is a really nice car. None of my friends have this. He goes, because all your friends are little kids.
Yeah. And he's just like, no, like,
I'm just waiting for you.
So it's funny, when you watch The Room first, there's all of these random football scenes. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, what is up with the football? I don't get it. But like, Tommy has this weird affinity for football.
He wants to prove that he's all American guy.
Right.
Tommy
right.
calls
yeah.
him all American guy.
Yeah. I do like when the casting directors are like, no, you're the villain.
No, it's so ironic, like, though, because he's clearly not all American guy.
No.
But he's like, I mean, he is a citizen. And he's like, I love America and I love football. And
yeah,
it's so
there's
great.
A lot of weird football yeah. in the movie.
So they go to this scene where they're doing
getting food or whatever.
Like a CPK.
Yeah.
And they're reading like some man on the electric man on the mountain.
Sometimes.
I don't know what the play is, but it's like, and so there's, it's like gods on Mount Olympus or
yes.
something like that. And Tommy convinces Greg to do this scene like out loud in front of everybody, and he's like,
and
but
go
these,
for it.
These people are eating. He's like, I don't care about these people. It's just you and me. They just go nuts yelling back and forth. Everyone's watching them, and Tommy gets them all to give him a round of applause
right.
in the middle of the restaurant.
He's like, oh, good job. Good
yeah.
job.
I like it. You're on the mountain. The wind is blowing, and he's in his hair. Oh my God.
And
Franco's so good at this.
I did see an article that said that like these guys are like brothers.
Yeah.
And you needed brothers to be these characters.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen them on screen for this long together.
No, this is the first thing they've done, like, partnered up on full.
And you could feel it.
Yeah.
Like, you could feel like they're into it. Like,
right.
As, you know, their bond. And that helps mm-hmm. with the bond between Greg and Tommy. So this is where Tommy just says, I got a place in L.A. Let's just move. And Greg's just like, you have a place in L.A.?
Yeah, why are we here?
Yeah, he's just like, yeah, I got a place here in San Francisco. I got a place in L.A. Yeah. And Greg's just like, what?
all right.
He goes, I have another place in L.A., but I don't stay there often. Like,
yeah.
Like, which would, of course, be 10 times more expensive than his place in San Francisco,
yes,
and he doesn't
yes.
use it.
What do you think it would
I
be?
Don't know that it would be.
I don't think
really?
It would be. I think
San Francisco is like
is super expensive.
Is one of the most. Really? I mean, not that L.A. is cheap, but I think L.A. is very sprawling.
Okay.
Yeah, San Francisco's like.
Because part of the problem with L.A. is it doesn't have a center.
Okay.
Like, there isn't a downtown L.A.
Oh, okay.
And so it just goes on forever. Mm-hmm. And that's why you'll see, like, I mean, like, I had a friend that lives in L.A., and I was like, oh, are you going to go to the Monkees concert? Because it was like, the last one with all three. And he was like, I don't know, man. He's like, that's about 20 miles from here. And I was like, what? And he's like, dude, L.A., 20 miles from here is like a 3-hour drive.
Oh, yeah, yeah, with that traffic.
Yeah, he's like, no. He's like, and so it's like, you know, you can live there in absolute super expensive
yeah,
ways.
Sure.
But I think you have more options for lower income living in L.A. than you do in San Francisco.
I didn't know that. Yeah, I always thought L.A. was like, I mean, that's
I remember a story like, man, 15 years ago, San Francisco was having so many problems with,
like, waste,
with the cost of housing increasing so rapidly, and that they were having trouble. They couldn't find, like, nurses and firefighters because none of them could afford to live there. Oh,
right.
Right.
Wow. Right.
And so they hired this guy from, I think, Minneapolis, who was like a housing expert. And they were like, we're going to pay you to come here and study the problem and then try and figure out ways to come up with lower income housing. Now, lower income housing is normally synonymous for, like, the projects. And,
right.
But they meant, like, legitimately, like, how can the working middle class afford to live here? Because we need them.
Right.
You know?
They mean, like, lower income $200,000
right.
houses.
And so they hire this guy, and he does his initial survey of the market, and he's like, okay, so if I sell my house and I want to move there, here's what you need to pay me so I can afford to come there and buy a house. And so they're like, okay. He flies out like 3 weeks later and looks around and then he calls him back and he's like, yeah, I'm not going to take the job. And they're like, why not? Like, because in the 3 weeks between when he told them what he needed to make and when he was trying to buy a house, real estate prices had gone up so much that he's like, the amount of money you offered me doesn't work anymore.
Wow.
And he turned down the job. Now, this would have been like 2002. This would have been like the major run up before
the
bubble burst.
15 years later.
Yeah, but it's always been like that.
Golly.
It's very, very expensive to live in San Francisco.
I stayed in San Francisco once, and it was such a weird. It was a weird thing to begin with because, like, a friend of mine had an apartment, but they were moving out.
Yeah,
so we just stayed. I felt like we were, like, what's the, just crashing in this random apartment. There's no furniture.
Yeah,
like, we're sleeping on random stuff, and I was like, this is weird. I don't like this at all.
Yeah.
I feel like we could go to jail. We're squatting basically, and
she's
like, no, I still have it for like another 3 days, and I was like, huh. All right,
yeah,
this is weird.
That is an expensive city to live in.
Yeah, no joke.
So they pack up, and Tommy picks him up like the next day at his house, and they move to
L.A. And so
great scene with Megan Mullally. We talked about it earlier.
Where she's just like, how? What? Yeah. All right, what's happening? So they go, and Greg immediately starts going to auditions.
Right.
And so they're a team. Like, they're, you know, make a bond and pinky swear. It's
right.
A really funny scene, but it's like Greg's a model.
Yeah.
And Tommy is Tommy.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you see the back and forth of Tommy circling ads,
all American guy.
Yeah.
And he, like, Greg is just circling ads. Like,
yeah.
Greg, he's just going to work.
Yeah.
And so he's not really hitting, you know, he's getting
the headshots,
the
modeling,
yeah,
the wind blowing in his head.
I like the, so this is where we see Sharon's, he ends up getting a deal with an agency. Yeah.
And I think Greg Sestero is the secretary for Sharon Stone.
No.
I think so.
I don't think so. So I watched those back to back.
Well, I know he looks different, but I think that's him.
If that's him, something happened.
I think like Tommy has prosthetics.
Like, he took
and everything.
His face off.
Yeah. Maybe not. I thought that was him, though, because
no.
I know they're both in the movie.
Oh, are they?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll look it up. Anyway.
Okay. So Sharon Stone shows up, another one who's had a boatload of work.
And the disaster artist, he plays casting agent, so I don't know if that's different or not.
Yeah, that casting agent is not what that office
is. No, it isn't. No. Okay.
That's like a book. That's an agent to get you jobs. A casting agent is going to be the person that finds people to, like, they do the, made the decisions.
Okay, so he was in just some other random casting scene. Yeah. Okay, never mind.
Is Tommy in the movie too?
After the credits.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah, that's fair. So he gets this deal, and like Tommy gets super jealous. Like he is not, like, anytime Greg gets a little bit of traction, Tommy finds a way to knock him back down.
Or in his personal life.
That's what I'm saying. They go to the bar, and he kind of starts flirting with Allison Brie, who's this bartender. And Tommy's immediately like, let's go. Like, this is boring. I don't want
to
be here.
They're having a great time, and he's dancing like an idiot. But as soon as he sees Greg talking to a girl.
Right.
Because he doesn't want to break up. Like, Tommy, and I don't believe Tommy has ever had any kind of, like, gay connection to Greg. He doesn't like him that way. But, like, he doesn't want his best friend taken away from
him.
Oh,
yeah. You know? I think that's
what
it is.
It's not a jealous like that. But it's like, well, if you separate the best friends, then Tommy's going to be by himself.
It's like a jealous 15-year-old.
Yeah. Exactly what it is. So, Allison Brie and Greg become a couple.
And this isn't like an Entourage situation. It's not really Allison Brie. It's
No, I'm sorry. Yeah, she plays Allison Brie is playing a character.
It's not like, was it, who is it?
It's Sasha Gray.
No, the one in Entourage, Turtle dates Jennifer Jason Leigh or Jennifer Love. Who?
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know. In Entourage, Turtle dates the actual actress playing herself or something.
I think it's Sasha Gray.
Oh. Never mind. Moving on. I just wanted to say she's playing an actual character.
Right, So nothing is happening. Nothing is working. And they finally, like, Tommy has had enough and he's getting super pissy. So he goes on, you know, Greg is trying to calm him down. And Greg just says, look, man, like, let's just do it on our own. And you'd think somebody gave Tommy a puppy.
Yeah.
Because he, like, the light bulb went off and he was like, yeah, of course. Like, why wouldn't I do that?
And he gives a tragic backstory that he wanted to be an actor, but then he got in this car accident that Tom mentioned earlier.
Right.
And that kind of ended his, you know, it was very bad for Tommy. And, and so maybe that's where he got his money. But he quit his dreams of acting since then. And Greg is, since Tommy's pushing Greg because it's his dream, he's pushing Tommy in the same way. And that's what's really great, especially when you read the story. It's like those two guys were there for each other. And as crazy as Tommy is, Greg would have never made it if it weren't for Tommy.
No, that's
Tommy
true.
Pushed him.
That's true.
Got him to even go out before the Puppet Master thing. Like, if it weren't for Tommy, he owes him a lot, and I think that's why he put up with so much.
There's a scene with Bryan Cranston that shows how much how dedicated Greg is to Tommy.
Yeah.
Like, there's a scene where Allison
and how douchey Tommy.
Yeah, right. So there's a we'll jump forward just a little bit where they're working on the room and Greg has grown this beard, which, by the way, looked awful. I'm just gonna say that, right? Like, it looks like
a fake beard.
Yes,
that was
absolutely a fake beard.
I would think so.
Yeah,
I just
it looked like
he
somebody
taped, grow really
taped pubes to his face.
I couldn't tell if it's just like he does have that like baby face in real life. So I'm like, is that like his attempt to grow a beard?
No, that was a fake beard.
Okay,
so his girlfriend ends up knowing, like, they see Bryan Cranston at like a Starbucks or something, and she ends up seemed like, oh yeah, like I do Pilates with him. So they have this conversation. And Cranston basically offers Greg, this is real, where he offers him a role on Malcolm in the Middle, because Malcolm in the Middle was like the hottest comedy at the time.
I don't think, was it Malcolm in the Middle?
Yeah.
In the book?
Oh.
Oh, like maybe they changed it.
I think they might have changed it because they probably had, I don't think it was that exact, but he did, but.
Was it Cranston?
I don't remember.
They might have changed it.
I think
so it could
they
be Cranston.
Okay. I think he just had a gig.
Okay.
And he did this to
him. It's a real situation.
So I think they just, like, I will say for the most part, I felt like this movie was very faithful to the book.
Right.
They compressed some timelines. They played a little game, like, with there just to, it's easier to.
I wonder if they can't have the rights to something.
I think it's probably just easier.
It's not rights. It's
to,
just,
to convey what happened in that moment.
Yeah.
It, you know, it's just more dramatically interesting.
Yeah,
it's from a storytelling
a book down to under 2 hours.
Right. But for the most part, I feel like it was a very fair representation of the story.
Like the mom is French. Greg's mom is French in the book, and so he does like a French accent when he's talking about his mother is French and always like talking about Tommy. It's like Megan Mullally's not even trying.
So they
change things like that to get different actors in it.
Okay.
But the overall story, is very
And I will say everybody in this movie you recognize, right? So it's Paul Scheer, June Diane Raphael, Jason Mantzoukas. So basically, the How Did This Get Made crew is in this movie.
When do we get our movie?
I know,
right? It's coming. It's coming. So yeah. So let's talk about. So they're getting. They've got Tommy's up all night. He's writing the script, drinking all these Red Bulls. They're
Is
really
that what
funny.
It was?
Yeah, he's got Red Bulls everywhere.
Yeah.
He's writing on a typewriter. It's like a montage over
he's
several
like, hey,
days.
Greg, how do you spell? Blah, blah,
yeah,
blah.
So like, hilarious. Like I said before, I just have to say it again, James Franco is fantastic in this.
It's
movie.
Interesting to see his. Like his career, you know, like he started as the cool kid on Freaks and Geeks.
Yeah.
And then he was Seth Rogen's buddy.
Yeah.
He was basically like the sidekick to Rogen for a while. And now he's steered that into this pretty illustrious career. Like the dude's legit.
I mean, he teaches acting classes at
UCLA.
Right? He stopped now, but he used to actually teach classes. The guy... People don't give James Franco enough credit for being talented. So like they see him as a goofy guy. They see him in the interview in Your Highness. They see him in Pineapple Express. But then you have to remember things like 127 Hours. But also he does a lot of indie art house movies.
That he does.
You may not see. But like, again, I was saying, you know, he teaches or taught acting classes. The guy is a very talented actor and people don't give him credit for that. And like this movie, this was really his brainchild.
Spider-Man.
Yeah. But he this is his project. Like this is a total love letter to the room and Tommy, and he and his friends love it. And he actually directed the movie. This is the weird Inception part. Franco directed the movie as Tommy Wiseau, directing himself playing Tommy Wiseau and
See,
all
it's
the
that
other
kind of garbage. I'm just like, shut up.
But look what movie it made. Like he,
I mean, okay,
yeah,
you know, like I could see him directing the scenes in the room,
yeah,
as Tommy. Like I could that, okay, but don't be a dirt.
He was committed. The main thing is he was committed to the role. Like the guy for the entire filming of this movie was in it. But yeah, great.
Did he mail anybody dead rats?
He's not a D-bag.
That's fair.
So anyway, he makes Greg read the script. He goes takes
and
it.
Greg is just like. All right.
He's like, okay, yeah, I'll read it. And he looks at him like, okay, start. And so reads the whole thing.
It's super awkward. Like, yeah, Greg is just like, yeah, okay, I'll get to it.
And
they just look at him.
And Greg reads it, and he clearly is just like, But he's
what
like, you did it, Tommy.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, they go to Burns and Sawyer. So the first people we'll meet are,
which is
I guess, Burns and Sawyer.
Hannibal Buress and Jason Mantzoukas.
They decide that they want to buy the equipment
to
rent it.
That was the best. That was another great part where, so Mantzoukas is saying, he's just like, look, you pay this much for rent and this, da, da, da. And he's like, no, we make a Hollywood movie. I'll buy it. And Hannibal Buress is just like,
that's not how it's
what
the standard is that you rent the equipment, it's cost prohibitive. And he's like, no, we buy
it. Yeah, we buy it.
So they go and have their little meeting.
And then they like and then
even
went,
studios don't buy
no,
the
hell no.
Like that, you know, like
it changes too quickly.
Yeah,
you don't
the technology advances so rapidly that they don't even invest the money. Yeah. They rent the equipment.
Right. And then he wants to do it on video and digital. Yeah. And Mantzoukas is like, I don't think like the lighting is different. He's like, no, we do them both.
This is all true.
Yeah, we do them both.
One of the reasons why it was so expensive is he bought the equipment instead of rented, and he shot simultaneous HD and a 35mm.
Yeah.
They take two crews to operate. It's totally different lighting, two sets of sound, everything. So, like, it's crazy.
It's insane.
But Tommy wanted to be a pioneer, and first movie to ever be filmed in 35mm and digital. Like, he always has this passion where he's like, I'm going to do this thing.
Yeah,
and do it. Yeah.
He did it.
So there's that scene. And then we get to the rest of the crew. So they go on. They're filming at Burns and Sawyer. That's part of the agreement. And we are introduced to Raphael, who is the DP.
It was Paul Scheer.
Yep.
I do like where he's like, what is DP? It's like production designer or whatever. It's like
director of photography.
Yeah, DP.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, and then the script supervisor is played by Seth Rogen.
Right.
And so they're like, what is this thing? Oh, yeah, and Tommy's like, you're hired. And they're like, oh, you don't want to, like, have us talk to us about the project? Like, no, you're hired.
You're hired.
And then
Rogen's just like, well, as the script supervisor, I would like to see the script. And he's like, no, you're fine. You'll get one when you get one. And he's just like, all right, whatever. I do like the scene where, so they're setting up the set. They're doing all the sets or whatever, and Rogen looks at like the this corner set.
They built this like
set.
Back alley brick wall, and they're building it literally next to a back alley brick wall.
The exact same back alley. And he's just like, but why don't we just film out there? He's like, it's a big Hollywood movie.
That's not how Hollywood does it.
Yeah, right.
Although it is how Hollywood would do it.
Right.
But yeah.
So they cast the girl, the blonde from The Room, who, like, that casting was hilarious. Well, they're just making these, like, no, you're a cowboy, but you're riding on and you're drinking a soda. And the gal's just like, am I still a cowboy? What am I doing?
Great little montage of the casting. So they end up with this cast.
But the blonde walks in and he just goes, you're hired.
Yeah.
Like, she doesn't do anything. And she was like, that's it. She's like, that's it.
He's bored with casting. Yeah. You'll
right.
do.
Right. Or he thought she was hot.
I think he was bored with
that. That could also be the case. Yeah.
So it's just,
I think she's cute, actually.
I do. She was really good. I liked her as well. Yeah.
The real one or the one of them?
The real one.
They're both of them. Yeah. So we are off and running with this train wreck of a shoot where
Josh Hutcherson is Denny.
Is Denny, yeah.
Chris R, played by Zac Efron.
Which I didn't realize was Zac Efron.
You didn't?
Until he said, like,
you saw his butt.
Yeah, until
and
I
then
saw
you
his
were
butt.
Like, that's
totally Zac Efron.
His tushy.
Yeah, he's like, do I have to call him Chris R? He's like, no, that's his name.
So in real, okay, so do you think in The Room when you watched it that Chris R was one of the best actors in The Room?
Like, no.
You didn't?
No.
Like, I thought he was the most believable actor about giving my money with the gun and everything.
Like, I guess it was just like that movie was what it was. I was like,
because he's by far and large considered one of the best actors in the entire Room.
I mean, I could see that for sure.
That's like being the prettiest Denny's waitress.
But he's believable. Like, he actually seems like an actor, though. He's believable.
He could have been.
He's not a real actor. He's the only one that's not a real actor. He's just a guy did a favor for them. He's first thing he's ever done. I don't think he's ever acted since. And he's by far and large the best actor in the
that's
room.
Funny.
It's just a funny thing.
Yeah, so
remember they do that one take in the Disaster Artist? They do
that's
one
true.
take, like, that was amazing. Yeah, because it's like he's so good.
And that was like the first scene they were shooting. There was like, oh,
and I love how there's hope, like everybody has this glimmer of hope, like, this is going well,
hey, maybe this might be
maybe,
okay.
Yeah, yeah. Suck.
but Denny,
but
Josh,
yeah, like, I didn't realize that was Efron until like after he was done with the scene, because he's yelling the whole time.
Yeah,
and then he finally talks and I was like, is that because like, that's Zac Efron?
I mean, that guy's ripped
Efron,
like, I'm just saying, like, he's come a long way since a High School Musical kid.
Oh,
like yeah, now, you know, he's in Baywatch and he's
from.
All, what do you know him from?
Neighbors.
Yeah, but I just mean
he's, are your friends.
We are your,
everybody. America still all a tizzy.
What a, oh gosh.
Over We Are Your Friends.
But you know, he started in High School Musical.
I do
like,
know
that's
that,
what
yeah.
made him. Yeah.
But that's not what I mean, I didn't, I was too old for that stuff.
Yeah.
So then the production is just a disaster, literally a disaster. From here on out, everybody kind of has their scenes, and the first day that, so this entire time, the relationship between Greg and Tommy is becoming more and more strained.
Yeah. It's
because
deteriorating.
Greg has other stuff going on, and Tommy is just like, he kind of says that he's moving out with it. Greg is moving out with his girlfriend, and Tommy's like, what about the movie? And he's like, yeah, we're doing it. Like, I'm with you the whole thing.
Yeah, I don't have to live with you to make a movie.
Right. Like, yeah. I'm not leaving. Like, we're good. And so I kind of felt like Tommy was starting to spiral a little bit.
Yeah.
And they do a very good job of allowing him to spiral, but not making him completely they're making him unlikable.
Right.
But not to the point where you're just, they've changed that character. Where even though he's unlikable, he's still likable because he's just Tommy. Like,
right.
That's kind of what it is. You know, like, I don't know how else to explain it. It's just like, that's just what he is.
It's the name.
Know, it's the name. Yeah, right.
How do you not love somebody named Tommy?
I mean, it's all right. So I'm trying to. Okay. So then we get to the scene with Bryan Cranston. He's like, look, we need you as a, like, if you want to come on, we'll bring you on as a mountain man or a
lumberjack. They need a lumberjack, and he had a beard. So,
right.
Yeah.
Right. So he goes to Tommy. He's like, hey, can we delay this scene? The beard. So they're going to shave his beard. If you know, in The Room, the Mark character walks in for Tommy's wedding clean shaven. They're just like, oh, you look amazing. Super weird. So he's like, can we delay that scene just a little bit so I can do this thing? He's like, oh, no, I can't do that. He's like, I got to treat you like everybody else. And he was like, I just need like 2 days. He's like, no. And of course, he is struggling with it. The character that Alison Brie is playing walks in and she's like, I can't believe you. And walks out. And the next scene is him shaving the beard off for the scene. And he gave up. I mean, obviously we know now that it wasn't Malcolm in the Middle, but if it was something big enough,
it was a good role. I forget what it was, but
it's a stepping stone. It's, yeah. You're still working with these people, putting on your resume. That's what other studios want to see. Is
right.
He tells a big story that's not in the movie, but in the book, that he was in Patch Adams, and he really plays it up because he's like, oh yeah, when he's auditioning, he's like, yeah, I was in Patch Adams.
Oh,
he was a background
right
character. He doesn't even have a line, but he's like, I was in Patch Adams with Robin Williams, and I know this director, and so he uses that. So like, yeah, if he can put that on his resume. I was in Malcolm in the Middle,
Right.
But no, I think the main point...
You gotta pad it a little bit.
Yeah. And I think the main point is no one can understand their relationship. Like, the girlfriend, and rightfully so, is like, you need to stand up for him. You need to do what's for you. But, like, again, Greg owes not everything. You can't
give him, he owes a lot.
But he's there because of Tommy. And so even if Tommy is kind of being a jerk, he still feels that he owes him because
right.
that's why he's there. So, like, I don't think... It's hard for anyone else to understand
I agree.
That magnitude.
Yeah, yeah. Right. So there's a scene where like the Tommy and Greg are on the outs. Like it's not good. So they're there to do the breast cancer scene, which if you've seen The Room, it's the most ridiculous. When I say it's the most ridiculous scene in the movie, that should tell you something about The Room.
Yeah.
Like if this is the scene where it's just like, and it's so hot. Tommy doesn't have I don't know why he won't kick on the AC or whatever.
So this is at the point where hasn't he already seen all the behind the scenes footage that people are.
Yes. So he has hired a second unit to videotape. He's spying on everybody.
He's trying to make a documentary. Like it wasn't even to spy on people. The whole point is he's, filming the first movie in digital in 35mm, and it's The Room, this masterpiece. He's the new Tennessee Williams, I want a documentary now about the making of the most famous movie ever made.
Right.
And so it starts off as that, but then he sees all the people talking crap behind his back, and he's basically like, no one respects me. I spent $6 million in this movie, which...
And then Rogan goes, you spent $6 million on this movie?
I think it was Greg that says
was it?
Because Greg didn't even know. He's like, well, where did it go? Where's? Yeah. But so like he's like, I spent all this money on the movie, and all you do is backstab me and betray me, and everyone's talking crap. And so I think he's like, I'm not spending any more money on air conditioning, water
all
because
that stuff.
No one respects me.
Right.
And then the old lady passes out,
and he was like, that's it. We're calling it. Like, we're taking a break for lunch. The scene that I did like is the infamous, I didn't hit her. I didn't hit her. Where he just can't get the line.
Yeah.
And this should tell you how awful Tommy Wiseau is as an actor, is that this dialogue is very simple, but he can't do it. Yeah. And for whatever reason, he almost does like a Rube from Major League 2, where Greg is like, gives him this little pep talk and he comes out and he nails it. And everybody's looking at, he nails it for Tommy.
Okay.
Yes.
I don't know that I'd say he nails it.
But it's
50 takes.
Yeah, it's the famous scene. It's probably the most famous scene from the movie that everybody quotes all the time. So somebody quoted that to me one time before I'd seen it, and they're just like, ha, 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 and I was like, I don't get it.
Well, those are two
different. It's from The Room.
Yeah.
And I was like, what's The Room?
So there's those two different scenes that happen on the rooftop. The one is the,
oh,
I did
hi,
not
Mark.
Hit her.
Yeah.
I did not. This is
did
bullshit.
Not.
I did not. Oh, hi, Mark. And the other one is that one they do like in the disaster arts three or four times where Greg is like, I once knew a girl.
Oh, the laughing scene?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the haha. What a what story.
Rogan's just like, did he just laugh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah. He's like, why?
And that's how it really happened. Like they could not get him to do one take. Like he's like, the script supervisor is like, okay, that's fine. Let's get one take where maybe you don't laugh. And so they just do it over and over again, and they finally get fed up and like, whatever, we got it.
He's like, this is a really intense story he's telling you. He's like, uh-huh.
It's about all a girl that was sleeping with a bunch of guys, and one put her in the hospital.
Right.
And Tommy
like,
will only respond,
what a funny story.
Ah, what a story. And it's like, no. And it's like, Tommy wrote this scene. It's not supposed to be funny.
That's what also they say. They're like, he wrote
you
this,
wrote
right?
It.
So. Yeah. So
I always like that he gives you the name of the street that the hospital is on.
Yes, yeah, it's so random.
I forget what it is, but you put her in
Guerrero Street.
In a hospital on Guerrero Street.
Do you know why he did that?
No.
You don't remember it from the book? There's a very specific reason.
It's
ad-libbed.
Yeah.
Greg did that, and it pissed Tommy off. That was where Tommy's house was, and he didn't want anyone to know about him. Don't talk about me. Don't talk about my life. Don't talk about my car. So Greg ad-libs and only does the line, or he did the one, and it was the best take where he says, I once knew a girl on, they put her out of the hospital on Guerrero Street, and Tommy was so mad. They're going to find me, you know? Like, it's like,
who's they?
Yeah. But anyway, that's the story behind that.
Okay, and it was interesting.
Like, and he says in the book, he's like, and that's the one that made it in the movie.
That's hilarious. So finally, I guess,
I think they,
oh, they do the sex scene.
Yeah.
And it's super, like, that scene, I got to tell you, that was hard to watch. Like,
in the real one?
The real one was what it was. Like, it, but oh. I mean, in The Disaster Artist, like,
oh,
the way
he's so
treating her.
Yeah.
And, like, and she's a very beautiful girl, and he's calling her ugly and, you know, like, fat. And, like, Paul Scheer's character,
I think
was,
it's mainly because she had a pimple on her shoulder.
She had like a birthmark
and
on her shoulder.
Was it a birth? In the book, I think at least it's a pimple.
I think but, in the book,
but he's like, I can't have this in my movie. This is a sex scene.
And they're just like, what is wrong with you? And the whole scene, Franco's running around with a peacock sock, basically. And I thought his peacock was out.
Oh, you're using the technical terminology.
That's exactly what it is. I don't know what else to call it. But like, I thought his peacock was like, there's a scene, like, he's running around with his clothes off, and there's one point where he like is climbing into bed, and I was like, did I just see Franco's like, that's super weird. But this whole movie's so weird, but
this is all real.
It's all real. And Greg is just like, you cannot talk to the, this is that scene that we were talking about. He's like, you can't talk to these people like that. Like, that's not okay. He's like, it's my movie. I talk to them however I want. So he goes back, and like, the girl is super distraught, and Greg is trying to smooth it all over.
And Raphael just almost fights with
him. Yeah,
like,
which makes me think like Raphael and the girl had a thing, because like he gets super defensive. But he could just be coming to her defense.
But this is really happens. Like, he, you know, the crew is like, I'm done with this crap. Yeah. And you're mistreating people. Everyone was on their last straw.
Yes. And he's like, you're fired. And they has a big talk. He's like, I'll give you one more chance. Yeah. It's fine. But yeah, like where he gets into bed with this girl, and he's like, they got to see my ass. They got to see my ass. Yeah. And I do like when they finally get to the screening and the entire crowd is just like, ooh, because I mean, it's basically his butthole. Like, that's the way that scene is shot. Like, it's super awkward. Yeah. But Rogan is just like, I think he's having sex with her belly button.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm doing it my way. I'm doing it. And they find like they get to the last day of shooting. And I think Tommy knows that he has done some serious damage to his relationship with Greg. So he fires the entire crew. So Rogan's character, Paul Scheer's character, everybody is fired.
I like how in the beginning of the movie, they're like day one of 30 or whatever.
Like,
and then by the
60?
End, they're like day 50 of 30.
Yeah,
it's
right,
like,
right.
Really good.
So they go and they have this scene. It's in the movie of them like jogging, and Tommy's wearing like MMA gloves and weirdly like hemmed pants.
I couldn't tell. I just couldn't tell. I've seen The Room several times. I couldn't tell if this
have you
was
really seen it several times? I don't think I could ever watch it again.
Well, when you go in person, it's like a Rocky Horror.
It is. Like,
oh,
the crowd
really?
Interacts
it's amazing.
With it.
Yeah. No, it's so fun. Okay. You haven't seen it until you go. This is a total commercial for
I watched
Room
it in
Midnight.
My basement.
Yeah. You got to watch it with other people. It's so fun. And there's things you say to talk, to interact with what the characters say.
I'm
a lot
you.
Of fun. So I'm not sure if this is the actual one or if this is like an extra scene, because in the movie, they're not fighting the same way they fight in.
They do not fight.
Right.
So that scene in the room is just, there's no audio. It's just them like throwing a football around.
Yeah. So I can't tell
running.
If this was an additional scene or if this was part of what ended up in the room. Like,
I wonder if it got cut.
But like, Tommy basically wanted to call him out because he's like, now you can really act because you're a guy that hasn't made it and you're not getting any roles. Like, he really pushes his buttons, and Greg's had enough of it.
Yeah,
and he's just like, screw you.
He kind of puts him in his place. Yeah. Like, they have a little throwdown right then and there. And that's kind of, and Greg Watton.
And this happens
to the
in real life.
Artist,
they really kind of break up. I mean, they are not friends for a long time because Greg is totally sick of Tommy's crap.
Right.
And Tommy gets really depressed. And eventually, as we know, they make up and now they're good friends
buddies.
And all that. But,
so they flash forward a couple months, and Greg is working on smaller stages. And I think he was doing Death of a Salesman, mm-hmm. and he was doing a really good scene. Like, Franco was able to act, quote unquote, act a
he's
little
grown
bit. He's grown as an actor.
And his mom's like, see, you don't have to be in big Hollywood. You can do these little.
He's just like, great.
Yeah, thanks, Mom.
And then I'm trying, does he get, oh, so he's getting like.
Getting his mail.
He's getting his mail, and he has an RSVP invitation to the world premiere of The Room. And he's just like, son of a bitch.
He throws it away.
God dang it. And he's driving down a street and he sees a billboard for the room.
And he ran this billboard. It was up for like, what, 2 years or something?
Are you serious?
Yeah. And that's part of what got people to finally go to the movie, because the movie in real life gets discovered by celebrities. Like Paul Rudd was an early adopter of the film, and part of what
it was actually a couple college guys that started it, and then they picked up steam and the celebrities found it. But like it was the last week of showing, and these college guys found it and they bought a ticket to it, and they were intrigued because the sign said no refunds.
It said no refunds, and it had a quote from a review that said, "This movie is like getting stabbed in the head." and so they were like, "I'm in."
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, and but then people started to go because
they kept bringing people back, and they are the ones that, like, the movie was supposed to be at theaters, and they convinced the theater to show it more, and they got more and more people and turned it into an event.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So he ends up coming out of, he sees the billboard, and he was like, my career is just becoming stable, and now this movie's going to come out, and I am effed.
And he's at the Death of a Salesman again.
He's coming
about
out
to leave.
He's leaving. There's
another night.
There's Tommy outside. And he was just like, "You did an RSVP." He's like, "Yeah, I know." And so finally, he's like, "We did it, man! Like, we're gonna. It's a world premiere. We're gonna do it." He's like, "All right, fine." So he puts on a tux, gets in the limo with Tommy
with all the promotional items. Tommy's
like, they can't get in the limo because it. Like, they can't sit next to each other because they've got all the promo
boxes,
items.
Yeah.
So they drive up to the theater.
This is so
funny. Promotional under. They drive up to the theater. Tommy rolls the window down, and he's like, keep going. And all of the people there was like, was that him? And he was like, would you expect anything else?
And Seth Rogen's like, at this point, it would be weird if Tommy didn't do something that was weird.
So they show up. The movie starts, and the crowd doesn't know what to do. And they start booing. And all of us
like laughing, like not appropriate.
Right. I do like the scene with the so they're doing the sex scenes, and the girl, the actress, she's like, I feel like, you know, and she's looking like a million bucks, and she's like, I feel like I'm overdressed. She's like, no. June Diane Rayfield is there. She's like, you look great. And then the sex scenes start, and she was just like, oh my God. She's like, it's still going on, isn't it? And she was she was just like, yep. Yeah, it is.
And again, if you haven't seen The Room, it's a very
long
scene.
I mean,
it's probably, what, 4 to 6 minutes?
It's four minutes long, but it feels like 40 minutes long.
Yeah, it is.
And he's
super awkward.
He's taking a rose, and he's taking the petals off it and, like, trying to put them on her, and he's, like, rubbing it. And then there's a little, Bed Bath & Beyond style, like, table fountain or something that they're, like, shooting through the fountain.
Oh, no. So what it was is they tried to do it. If you in the Disaster Artist, they show you that it's a window that is rigged,
or it's like a fake window pane
to have water, like it's rain.
Yeah.
And
but it just looks so, like, he's trying to be artistic, and it's just like,
it's awful.
It's ridiculous.
So, and the crowd starts laughing and like hysterically laughing, and
it's funny to watch, because at first they're like laughing, but they're trying to contain it,
right?
And like they're trying to be polite because they don't. And then at some point, just the dam breaks, and they just give up.
Yes,
and it's an emotional scene. Franco as Tommy. I mean, he has a tear rolling down his eye because he put his blood, sweat, tears, life into this movie.
Red Bull,
and he was definitely sweating Red Bull at this point. And it's emotional because he's looking around, and even Greg's laughing, but he stops when he sees that Tommy. You know, and it's sad. And he walks out to the lobby, and this is a really nice scene between Greg and Tommy.
This is one of those scenes where I think it helps with their brothers.
Yeah.
It adds to that.
And
where he just kind of says, he's like, look, people make movies all the time, and there's no, but look at what you did.
Yeah. And he's
your movie is causing this.
And people are enjoying it.
Yeah. And initially, ironically.
Yeah.
But not ironically now, like once they own it. And so at the end, Tommy gets up there, and he was just like,
well,
thank
they're all
you.
He's in the lobby, and they all start chanting Tommy,
right?
Which really happened, I believe. And so he goes up there, and it's just a great moment. He's like, this is my movie, this is my life,
this
and everyone's cheering.
Thank you for enjoying my comedic movie.
Yeah,
I planned
that was
the entire time. But what makes me think this actually happened is because you can, with some movies, you can say that this happened, but you can't confirm it.
Yeah.
All you have to do is go, like, I'm sure you could find the people that were in that screening.
Yeah.
Like, what happened? Like, it's all stuff that you could prove.
I mean, this is Greg's tell-all book. I mean, this was in the book. I mean, this is how it went down.
And that's kind of how it ends, is them up on stage, and then it, we get kind of a rundown of what happened. Like, the movie has been on tour, and it's become, like, a cult classic.
The movie cost $6 million, allegedly. It played for 2 weeks.
Yep.
Made $1,800
Yeah, but then yeah, it's like found its second now. Life. But it's nice. They show clips really of Tommy going out and doing the screenings. And they said it's now recouped its money, which is true. And it's like he shows it all over the world. Greg and Tommy are still best friends. They're doing a movie called Best Friends that's coming out.
No, they're
soon.
Not. Yeah, they are. Comes out next year.
Best Friends God. With R in parentheses. So it's like Best Fiends, Best Friends. They're like drug deals and guns. It's getting really good reviews. It was at a
Shut
film festival.
Your mouth.
It is. Greg wrote it in like 4 days. Greg wrote it this time, and
so maybe it'll be okay.
Maybe yeah.
So
non-ironic,
yeah. Right. But it's getting good reviews, seriously.
Oh my god!
But you know, they're just doing all sorts of stuff now, and touring especially. And so they do a really great breakdown during the credits. They show the fake scenes. They film more than was even in the movie, but they're
there's
like
a lot of it
identical.
My favorite scene is the flower shop scene.
That's like, my favorite scene in the room. When you watched it in the room, were you just like, "This is amazing"?
Yes, like that is.
Oh,
I was
hi,
like,
Tommy. I didn't know it was you.
And like. What? Rogan had so like I watched it as I'm watching The Room in my head I was like how does anybody not recognize
Same
him
here. She looks at him and then she turns away and then goes oh hi I didn't
recognize
like,
you
what? But then and then goes,
Rogan's just like how do you not recognize that guy
yeah but then he goes here she goes that's whatever and he goes okay here you go keep the change hi doggy.
And
then
and just walks out
bye Johnny you're my favorite customer. Like, so when I first watched the movie not to go on too much further but when I first watched the movie I'm like okay
you talking about Disaster Artist or The Room
I first watched The Room I was like this movie is clearly an alien trying to replicate what human life and interactions is that's Tommy looks like an alien in a human suit
I can
like
see
there's
that.
Just something
sure,
weird about
sure.
it he's in good shape but it's weird right
he's
like,
ripped
he's
like,
almost
he
like
is...
he's like Stallone though it's like HGH ripped right yeah. It's weird and so I'm like this is an alien doing an analysis of human life
yeah.
and what interactions and relationships
that,
are
that's I could see where that scene could look like something out of a Twilight Zone
it's
episode
so weird yeah. But they show all those scenes and then after the credits we see like it's like near it looks like a rooftop party or something and Tommy is outside Franco Tommy is outside leaning on the wall
yeah.
And here comes Tommy Wiseau with the fakest stupidest looking mustache and his hair tucked into a short wig and they just have this crazy interaction where Franco Tommy is like where are you from and he goes are you from New Orleans and he's like yeah I'm from New Orleans they have this great back and forth and then anyway he leaves once Tommy's like you know get out of here and he's like geez people are so strange this day and then he was like oh hi Betsy just a nice kid cameo,
it was so weird.
It's so weird.
It's such a weird, like the fact that there is no information on this dude.
Yeah.
Is in this day and age.
In this day and age.
Is flabbergasting. Yeah.
I mean, I think it's
which makes you think he might be an alien.
I'm telling you, that's my theory.
Possible. Men in Black yeah. 4. We're going to find out.
But I absolutely love this movie.
I did not really want to see it. Like, I had no affinities to this movie. I'm super glad that
right?
I did.
Yeah. It's good.
It was a lot of fun.
I saw it twice. I went back and I saw it. And I think I really, like, did Tommy proud somewhere, even though he doesn't know this. But, like, I went to go see it on one of the biggest screens in the area. It's, I saw it on the old...
He saw it in 35mm yeah, and digital.
And there you go, yeah. So. But I went to see it in this giant screen with, like, 200 leather reclining heated seats.
You're going to go to a boutique theater to watch Star Wars, aren't you?
Well, yeah, because I'm a hipster right. now. But anyway, it's just like somewhere Tommy is smiling because he knows it. And like this movie, A24, again, they released this movie on IMAX.
That's insane.
Because there's nothing else the week before Star Wars out. So they took all the IMAX screens.
That's fudging
and
brilliant.
See the Disaster Artist in 2D IMAX.
That's
like,
hilarious.
That's funny. So, I guess that's the Disaster Artist.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. Go check it out.
Yeah. So let's go around the table and everybody can say where to find themselves.
This is Joe. You can follow me on the Twitter at JoeyButts, BUTTS21.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at KevinRBracket.
And this is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at RogerKubert or on Facebook at Facebook.com/TomO'Keefe. You can find the show on Facebook at Facebook.com/RealSpoilers or on Twitter at RealSpoilers or on our website, RealSpoilers.com. So that's it for this episode. Coming up with the next one, we will tackle The Shape of Water, the critical darling that everyone loves.
Everyone?
Sure.
Yeah.
So how do we know? We haven't seen it yet.
That's true.
It's a ways away yet. So but that'll be coming up on the next episode. So
it's GDT. How could you go wrong?
Exactly. So thanks for tuning in. And until next time, Eros lets Trent and the cops enter the saucer.
I did not hit her. It's not true.
I did not hit her. Oh, hi, Mark.
Lisa, Lisa,
you're tearing me apart.
You know what they say, love is blind. Let's go eat out, everything is fine.
Chip, 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 chip.
I don't mind.
Chip, 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 ch
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.